Whether you're a world-class athlete or a podcaster like me, we all understand the importance of mental and physical well-being and proper recovery for top-notch performance. That's why I'm excited that Unified Healing is sponsoring this podcast. Unified Healing is a new and super innovative global network of wellness centers powered by Energy Enhancement System, or EE System. If you haven't heard of the EE System, you'll want to listen up. This technology promotes wellness, deep relaxation, purification, and rejuvenation. At hundreds of locations across the globe, access to a center is easy and affordable. Interested in experiencing the EE System technology for yourself? Go to unifiedhealing.com/bluewire to learn more and find a center near you. That's unifiedhealing.com/bluewire. No material or testimonials on the Unified Healing website are intended to be viewed as medical advice or a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment and before undertaking a new healthcare regimen, including EE System.
The MMA Gambling Podcast on the Sports Gambling Podcast Network is presented by WynnBET. WynnBET is now live in Colorado, Indiana, Michigan, New Jersey, Tennessee, Virginia, and Arizona. From boosted parlays to in-game odds on every major sport, WynnBET has what you need to win. Sign up today to receive a $1,000 risk-free sports bet. Download the WynnBET app now or visit wynnbet.com and start winning today. We're also brought to you by PrizePicks. PrizePicks is daily fantasy sports simplified. All you have to do is pick your favorite player over and unders to cash in. Head on over to prizepicks.com and use promo code SGP for a 100% instant deposit match. And next, we're brought to you by PropSwap, America's marketplace to buy and sell sports bets. Check out the new PropSwap.com and use promo code SGP on your first deposit to receive up to $500 in bonus cash. And next, we're brought to you by SoBet. Sign up to get bet against your friends and join the social betting revolution at SoBet.io/SGPN. That's SoBet.io/SGPN. And finally, we're brought to you by Better Fantasy. Better Fantasy is a new free-to-play app that allows you to sync your fantasy football league and bet on the head-to-head matchups. Download the app today or just head on over to bettorfantasy.com/SGPN. That's bettorfantasy.com/SGPN. And finally, while you're downloading apps, don't forget to download the SGPN app. We're your home for all of our free picks and podcasts. Get that app in the palm of your hand by downloading it wherever it is you download apps.
Howdy ho, Degenerinos, and welcome to the MMA Gambling Podcast from the Sports Gambling Podcast Network. Made it up to episode 98. This episode, I decided I will dedicate to the UFC's main lead play-by-play announcer, John Anik, because he had a classic quote last night during the main event when he said, "He's not a man you want anywhere near your backside." Which I thought was an amazing quote. And so we're going to give this one to John Anik. Thank you for putting a smile on at least my face. What face would this be? Whose name would be attached to this face? It would be Jeff Fox's face. Hello. I would be one of the hosts at this here podcast. I do have an associate co-host who beat me once again. It's like three events in a row. He's coming on strong to end the year. Despite there not being enough time for him to catch up, he is coming on strong. He's also, what can I tell you about him? He's also a man you don't want anywhere near your backside. Even though he's almost a brown belt at this point, but he's still, you don't want anywhere near your backside. His name is Daniel Gumby Vreeland. Hello.
So you said not enough time to catch up. I didn't get a chance to do the math, but I'm assuming that's telling me that I didn't make up quite enough ground for the last event to matter.
No, yeah, no, for sure. Money-wise, you...
I always like that you throw money-wise in, as if gambling is about something else.
Let's see. Two events ago, you gained $500 from me. Last night, you gained four or something. So, yeah, you're only 360 behind. So
also, I would just need another event like this one right here. Yeah, I just need to repeat the performance. That's all. Yes. It's easy to do that when you have a good night.
And it's true. We don't want you anywhere near our backside. Is that correct in that?
In the same way, I assume he said that about Charles Oliveira, right? I didn't catch that line.
Are there rumors about him?
I'm pretty sure.
It was about him, yes. Charles Oliveira, yes.
Actually, my back take game, probably some of the worst parts of my jiu-jitsu game. My rear naked choke offense. I mean, like, rear naked chokes are generally, like, one of the easier chokes to get in jiu-jitsu. But I would say it's probably one of the worst parts of my game. So I'd say I'm okay around your backside if that's what you're looking to do. So the other thing I will say, while we're giving announcers credit for hilarious things they say, did you by chance catch the amount of times that Daniel Cormier said did their homework? It's wild. Yeah. It is so funny.
Weird, right?
Yeah, it's weird that it just kept coming up. And I would say this
kind of
it happened most obviously in the Pedro Munhoz Dominic Cruz fight. He said, "Oh, it's pretty clear that Munhoz has done his homework in this one."
It's also, first of all, it's weird that you brought my story, you turned my story into a jiu-jitsu story, but anyhow, I think I said this, maybe in the SGPN Slack, I think, but it's also very clear who does their homework and who doesn't do their homework. So, like, Dominic Cruz really doesn't even need to say, doesn't need to point out who's crappy at the job and who's not, because it's very clear who knows fighters, knows how to pronounce their names better than I do, and who knows actually who's actually watched a few of their fights, and it's very clear who are just there trying to be entertaining and don't have a clue what they're talking about. So, well, like, you don't really have to point these things out.
I will go to bat for DC for a quick second, because I think, you know, some of the criticism on him is maybe somewhat warranted, but like I see a lot of people throw DC in that same boat as Joe Rogan, who like just obviously couldn't have less of an idea who some of these fighters are on a daily basis.
Right.
Like he is completely shut off. He's like, I make money elsewhere and I'm a staple of this. Go ahead and try to fire me. Basically, it seems like he's got that attitude. I will say this about DC. While a lot of people give him crap for like, you know, like playing the funny guy all the time and not being super technical, I think he's doing that intentionally a lot. I think he knows usually whoever he's alongside of, the Dominic Cruises of the world, are going to bring the dry technical shit, and that's just not him. He's, like, not a dry technical guy. I also will say, like, while he does occasionally say something that is incorrect, I will say that, like, the instances of him saying something that are just, like, undoubtedly wrong, it's pretty rare for him to say something like that. Like, he generally is saying good things. He's just generally not, like, pointing out the smallest, tiniest nuance, and I think that's just sort of his style because he knows other guys will.
You go tell that to Sean Sheehan, okay? He is not a fan of DC. If you listen to the Severe MMA podcast, he's all over DC's case. But
I'm guessing the big thing for him is the scoring criteria. Because the big thing for me, that's my that's my major beef with DC. Like, when he was, him and Rogan were both talking about how, and we'll get to talking about the fight in a second, how Ryan Hall very well could be down two rounds if he doesn't get out from underneath here, while he repeatedly bashed Derek Minner's head in with elbows and threatened him with arm bars. And he's like, oh yeah, but he's laying down, so he's down two rounds. I was like, he is undoubtedly up two rounds right now.
I was hoping they were going to be wrong.
Yeah, well, like,
I mean, right.
I said this to my wife too. I said, I'm really frustrated that the announcers are saying this wrong. I know I'm right. And I just don't know if the judges will side with me or the wrong announcers.
Yeah, no. I think that was mostly their point, too. They were basically saying guys win off their back, but judges don't always see it that way. I think that's more of an old-school type thought and old-school type judges. You don't really see that as often now. You see people winning off their back, as we did last night. So, yeah, this I was all ready to dedicate this episode to Derek Minner, but screw that guy.
Wait, I thought he was a better grappler than Ryan Hall. Didn't somebody one time tell me that?
His grappling was fine. His grappling was fine last night. It was his dumb decision making. He shouldn't have been grappling to begin with. But anyhow.
And if you had listened to episode now I'm forgetting the number. Whatever the last episode
97?
Of the
podcast
was. 97. Somebody said he thinks he's a good grappler and is dumb enough to repeatedly grapple Ryan Hall.
But he still was not the dumbest. He didn't fight the dumbest of all the fighters last night. Someone else did, very surprisingly and shockingly, was the dumbest fighter last night. But we'll get to that in a moment, will we not? First, Tick Pick. Let's tell you about Tick. It's T-I-C-K Pick, everyone, all right? Tick Pick. College football's championship weekend is behind us, but bowl season is almost upon us, and there's no need to exhaust yourself searching all over the internet for tickets to see your favorite team play in their bowl game this winter. Because Tick Pick, that's T-I-C-K-P-I-C-K, is the original no-fee ticket site and the only one you'll ever need as your go-to for all your tickets for NCAA football, NFL, concerts, NBA, and more. Dan and I are going to use it to buy tickets for, we decided we're going to see the Suns and the Bulls in the NBA Finals, and we're going to go to Chicago, so this is closer, we decided. We're going to buy our tickets off Tick Pick. Too bad half of Chicago's team is in COVID protocols now, but it'll be cleared up, I think, because COVID's over. Tick Pick got rid of all those awful service fees that the other ticket sites charged, which lets them guarantee the best prices on all their college football tickets. Don't believe it? If you can find better prices for the same seats on another ticket site, Tick Pick will give you 110% off of the difference in the purchase price. So visit Tick Pick today at tickpick.com/SGP. That's tickpick.com/SGP. We're also brought to you by Prize Picks. Prize Picks is the easiest way to play daily fantasy. Daily fantasy is simplified. You pick 2 to 5 players and over-under on the projections. You can win up to 10 times on any entry. And if you use promo code SGP, you receive 100% deposit match up to $100. It's just you versus projected numbers. Prize Picks has a ton of stats to choose from, including yards, receptions, touchdowns, fantasy points, and more. Prize Picks allows mixed sport entries. You can take the over on LeBron. Take the under. He's old. On LeBron combined with the over on Mahomes, because he's not old, in the same entry. Prize Picks offers every sport you can think of, like NFL, college football, NBA, college basketball, MLB, soccer, MMA, and more. Prize Picks has an award-winning, easy-to-use mobile app, both on the App Store and Google Play. They are 4.8-star rated in the App Store with rave reviews. Prize Picks entries can be made in 60 seconds or less. It's that easy. Prize Picks is safe and offers fast withdrawal. So PrizePicks.com, promo code SGP for 100% deposit match. And Dan's going to tell you what you should spend that on now. How were your picks this weekend? I can't remember now. I never remember who you picked. Do you remember?
Randy Costa's hit. I remember that one because I said under 7.5 minutes of ring time for him.
Okay, good.
And he got knocked out, I think, 6 seconds before that happened.
Perfect.
I said the under on Ty Tuivasa punches, but I think he probably went over on that.
Yeah, he fought smarter than normal. Yep.
He fought smarter than normal and, like, the finishing.
Yes, I think that was over right there.
Probably hit the over. Not terribly great. I can't remember the third one.
Whatever.
But for Monday, since you guys are hearing this on Sunday, on Monday, I'm going to give you the over on Matt Stafford passing yards. That's 270.5 for Monday Night Football. I'll give you the over on Kyler Murray rushing yards, which is only 23. I think he's going to get that pretty easily. And then I'm also going to give you the over on Zach Ertz receptions on 4. So triple overs there, and I'm feeling good about all of them.
Do I know what teams all those guys play in? Arizona, right?
Arizona is one of them. And
Matt Stafford is still Detroit in my mind, but I'm sure he's not. And Zach Ertz is still Philadelphia in my mind. But
yeah, so Zach Ertz is with Kyler Phillips in Arizona.
Okay.
That's a recent trade, though. That was a midseason trade, so no reason you shouldn't know that. Or should know that, rather. And Stafford was traded at the beginning of the season to the Rams, who will be playing the Cardinals on a very exciting Monday Night Football game.
I only know CFL. No, I don't know that either. But the Grey Cup
just
starts.
Happened?
Yes, it starts in about 50 minutes from now. And my father-in-law's favorite team is playing the Hamilton Ticats, so I guess I can't watch this.
Who are they playing?
Probably like a Blue Bomber. They're all Bombers up here. Blue Bombers or something Bombers. I should check. It's not called the football team. I know that.
What is an Argonaut?
It is. Argonaut is something like... Is it biblical? It's like Jason. It's a real thing. I just can't think off the top of my head. Winnipeg, of course, the most Canadian of all towns. Winnipeg Blue Bombers and the Hamilton Ticats in Hamilton. So that's if you want to bet on that. What's the number? There's no number listed here. Weird. I'm sure people are betting on it that are listening. So this isn't a CFL podcast.
If you check out the Slack channel, I guarantee there are GGN's betting on it.
Exactly. Slack channel was jumping last night. That was the busiest I've seen the fight. Channel on there for sure. There's people were having a good time last night. It sounds like a lot of people made money. People thanked us for making money. I'm thinking, well, you didn't really follow my picks, at least if you made money, that's for sure. Even Gumby made an appearance in there. He talked about going to see some 41 concert. So, yeah, good times. Right?
Yeah, I did. I completely forgot I had done that until you said it. And I was like, oh, yeah, I did talk about going to see the Sum 41 concert for a little while right next to where one of the fellow D-Gen lives. So, yeah.
I never saw them in concert, which I'm fine with. But I saw a concert with them. They were like they were two rows ahead of us when we saw Oasis the one time in Toronto. So they all had their matching tattoos in the back of their arms. That's how we knew who they were. So there you go. And they were at some bar my brother's band was playing at the same night, I think, too. So there you go. There's my stories for you. Some 41 stories. Not a fan, though, but I'm older than you, so I would explain that. So
Yeah, I probably would explain it.
This isn't a Sum 41 podcast or a CFL podcast, though. This is a MMA podcast, I guess. All right, so we're going to break down last night's historic, I think we can say it was historic, UFC 269. And then for the real hardcore gens, we have some KSW picks for you. They have an event. The Polish promotion has an event coming up next weekend, so we've got some picks for. First, we will head to Paradise, Nevada, T-Mobile Arena. 8 million gate, which was, I believe they say it set a record, a non-Conor McGregor record. They had 18,471 people packed in there. Tai Tuivasa drank out of most of their shoes on the way back. and I think security stopped him, or he would have drank even more, it looked like. Main event, an underdog won, but he retained his title. So it was one of those strange situations where underdog was the champion heading into the fight. Charles Oliveira submitted Dustin Poirier, rear naked choke. Basically, he started it standing and finished him off. We finished him off on the mat, right? Am I remembering that correctly?
Yes. No!
He
never actually made it to the mat before he tapped. Okay. He was, like, hunched over, I think. I think maybe his hand touched the mat once or twice on the way in. But, like, yeah, no, he tapped standing up, which is pretty wild.
Yeah, early round 3, minute 2 in. Looked like I was going to be right with my Poirier pick because Poirier was putting the power on him. It was very clear that he was a much more powerful striker than Oliveira. But you got to give Dobronx credit. He took the best that Poirier could offer, and he was just incredible grappling as expected. I think the key to all that is that he's seems to be much more durable now, and his striking has improved so much that he's not just a one-trick pony anymore. But all due respect to Oliveira, plus 130, I think he's beaten the best lightweight in the world now, so he is the rightful champion now in my eyes. I'm sure he's relieved by that.
Yeah, well, I think he, while you, like, joke about that and, like, I'm sure he doesn't get, I think he did go in with a little bit of a chip on his shoulder that people didn't think he was the best in the world, right? Because the only reason that fight with Michael Chandler happened for him was because Dustin Poirier didn't want it. And like that, regardless of whether or not you've got the gold around your waist to prove it or whatever, that I feel like that's got to be on the back of your mind no matter what. That like the guy who everybody wanted in that fight wasn't in that fight, and whether or not he would have taken your spot or your opponent's spot sort of is immaterial, right? Because, like, that's who everybody thought was the best in the world, and really now Charles Oliveira has shown he is the best in the world.
Yeah, no, it's unquestionable after that performance last night. Feel bad for Poirier, but, hey, that's the way the cookie crumbles. This is kind of his thing, though, now, isn't it? He doesn't win in the huge spot.
Yeah, I mean, like, it is and it isn't. Like, it's always hard to say that, but, like, yeah, it hasn't happened a lot. And in addition to that, like, whenever somebody says that, like, somebody chokes in that position, for me, it's always also, like, did he choke or did he just hit the limit of what he can be, right?
Yeah.
And yeah, maybe it's unfortunate that it's this level, but also I would say, stylistically, you have two guys who have beaten him with roughly the same thing, right? Like, two guys beat him with rear naked chokes. Two guys beat him with superb grappling and amazing positioning. And granted, slightly differently, right? Because Khabib is like a crushing wrestler. And Charles Oliveira is just like insane in the way he takes people's backs. It is so fast. So like, you know, different in those respects. But, I mean, like, look back at the people he's beaten recently. Conor McGregor, Dan Hooker, Max Holloway, Eddie Alvarez, Justin Gaethje, Anthony Pettis, Jim Miller, Like, Jim Miller is the last one who you would call, like, a capital G grappler, right? And that was a majority decision. That one judge actually saw that as a draw. So, you know, not for anything, but, like, you know, maybe that's part of what's held him back is just that, like, he has a tougher time with people who are, you know, very clearly grappling first.
Yeah, he's a good grappler, but I guess he's more of an offensive grappler. He's obviously, his defensive grappling needs some work because, as you just laid out there, grapplers seem to be his kryptonite. So what's next for him? Just more fun money fights, or are we going to be serious and have him fight serious contenders still?
I mean, like, the way he made it sound in his post-fight interview, I really wouldn't be shocked if we never see him again. He said he could put together another 3 or 4 or 5 fight winning streak and fight for a belt again, and he's not sure he has it in him to do that. And, you know, first of all, I respect that. I respect, you know, recognizing that, like, this may have been my last chance, and I don't know if I have an extended run in me again. You got to remember, too, this is a guy with businesses outside of here that are doing well. He's got sponsorships that is clearly taking care of him. And, like, I think he's doing well monetarily. I don't think he has to keep fighting at this point. I think that drive is still there, but I don't think he has to. So if the drive to do a, you know, 2-year run to get yourself back into title contention isn't there, man, I could see him stepping away. I do think there is a chance he just does he just does that big smash grab and gives me one more Conor McGregor fight and goes and gets it. But, like, I wouldn't be surprised if he walked away.
Yep. But no one ever walks away, Dan, so not going to happen. But and Charles Oliveira, sounds like Gaethje is very much the next man for him. What do you think the odds are? I got some odds sent to me. Opening odds.
For Gaethje Oliveira?
Yeah.
I'm going to say
I'll
say Oliveira -210.
Yeah, open at -205 went down to -190 when I got odds sent to me. So, yeah. +165 coming back on Justin Gaethje. Like,
yeah,
I don't know. Sorry.
I like those odds because I would say this. I saw Justin Gaethje fight Khabib, and yeah. I know the trouble he had both with the takedown and his jiu-jitsu looked really bad off of his back. Like, yeah. He looked like he didn't know how to hold the half guard. So, like, I think him on the – like, that would only have to be on the ground for 4 seconds and Oliveira would have a submission.
But he also
he throws big bombs. You're right. He throws big bombs. I 100% agree with that. But also, Oliveira is not easy to knock out, as we learned last night.
No, apparently not. Apparently not. Yeah, I was going to say Gaethje hits a lot harder than Poirier, I would say. And so if he was having trouble with Poirier's power, you don't want to get cracked by Gaethje too many times, but. It's strange how much has changed with Oliveira. He was the guy who would quit in fights when the going got tough, and he was a guy who would never make weight for fights, and now look at him.
Yeah, he's a changed man.
Yeah.
The quit in fights, I mean, I guess he did quit in a couple of them. One of them, didn't he have something torn in his throat? Am I thinking of the right guy?
He had
tore his throat open or some nasty thing like that, some muscle in his throat. But, yeah, like – He clearly has changed a lot about what he does in preparation. Clearly, he's got a lot of faith in the people behind him and his team. And I would say this, he's added, like, solid work to the body along with, you know, some decent boxing to back up his already good strengths. And he's learned how to put them together. So, you know, before it was kind of like jiu-jitsu or bust, and now it's use the jiu-jitsu to open up the boxing, use the boxing to open up the jiu-jitsu, and he's the champ for a reason. He's damn good at it.
Yep. So I guess I got this pick wrong because I underestimated Oliveira a bit and maybe overestimated Poirier's grappling, which obviously was not on point, at least not enough last night. All right, we can just breeze through the co-main event. Went pretty much the way we said. Amanda Nunes, -900. It's barely worth betting on, but we have to pick every fight. So we picked Nunes, and of course she won, and she's off to fight Kayla Harrison next.
It is pretty crazy to me. No, so like, obviously the result in itself is crazy, right? Like, nobody saw Juliana Pena winning, even those people who saw...
I told you she had a path to victory. She was going to knock her out, I said. Instead, she blitzed her on the feet and ended up finishing with the submission. That's all.
So. Yeah. So for anybody who was talking about her winning, I first of all would just question if you're also people who took, like, Megan Anderson to beat Amanda Nunes or, you know, like if you're those people and now you're hitting the Juliana Pena one, I don't really want to hear it. If this is your first like massive underdog pick that you've ever thrown out there and you're just saying like, you know, I really think she's got a path to victory. If you're just saying she had a chance, okay, you got that one. You said she had a chance. Awesome for you. But yeah, I would say, To get to the actual fight, now that I've done shit talking anybody who actually picked Juliana Pena, it was quitting, right? Like Amanda Nunes quit in that fight. Like,
yeah,
hooks, I don't mean
hooks
to be
weren't
mean,
in.
Or any,
choke wasn't even really in. It, I guess we're bearing the lead. Juliana Pena won submission rear naked choke round two, 3:26 into it, after suckering Nunes into. Like right from the get-go, Nunes was had a smirk on her face and obviously was overlooking Pena and was obviously gamblers will know she was on tilt. She was not fighting smart and she was throwing sloppy haymakers and got into a scrap. And obviously she let Pena get into her head and got blitzed on the feet, and then she like totally gave up because as the expression goes, fatigue makes cowards of us all. Not to say Mam Nunez is a coward, but she very clearly quit after getting beat up in the feet and getting totally gassed out only 8 minutes into the fight.
Yeah, it was crazy to me, especially because
crazy
like,
everyone
you could see it happening too. That's
yes,
the thing.
Yes.
You could see it happening. By chance, have you seen odds, because I can't seem to find them anywhere, have you seen odds on a rematch?
I have. I was going to ask you that. What do you think the odds in the rematch are?
I have to imagine Amanda Nunes is a massive favorite. Am I wrong?
It opened -250 for Nunes, and now it went up to -330.
Yeah, and I would, if you're interested in betting on something that is not even booked, like that's sort of not my gig, right? Like I don't like to just leave money in the bookie's hands until that one actually gets, you know, put together, and then you see the bet, and then something might happen in the lead up. But if you're one of those people, get that line before it goes up, because I bet you it's -600 or -700 by the time it happens. Because, like, you know, and to take nothing away from Juliana Pena, she put on an expert performance. She looked as good as she's ever looked. If you imagine that fight happening again and Amanda Nunes coming in with the right headspace, Amanda Nunes is going to flatten her the next time, right? No part of that fight made me lose faith in what Amanda Nunes is from the physical side. It just gave me a slight bit of hesitation on the mental side.
Yep. I see her at -1200 somewhere. I'm not sure if they still have the old fight. I don't know if this is still listed as if their best fight odds is still bringing in odds from a site for last night or what. But Juliana Pena is not even good, Dan. That's the thing. She's okay. She's an average fighter, I would say, at best. And now she's the champion.
I think I legitimately think if I like pulled up the UFC's, let me pull up the UFC's rankings right now. And I will tell you the people who I think I would not only say could beat her, but I would favor to beat her in a fight. So
a lot of them already have beat her too. That's the thing.
So first of all, Amanda Nunes, 1000% I would pick Amanda Nunes. Holly Holm, Irene Aldana, I would pick. I think I would pick Aspen Ladd to beat her. And I would pick Ketlin Vieta. Jermaine Durandamine, who's technically not in the rankings.
Yep.
We're talking about, I don't think she's a top five fan. I don't think she's a top five bantamweight, but turns out in MMA, every dog has its day. Last night was Juliana Pena's day.
And they're saying that, well, there's rumors that Nunes wasn't even training for this and all this stuff. So I think it was the perfect storm. Pena did exactly what she had to do to win the fight. So she had a good performance. I'm saying that she's not even that good isn't me saying she wasn't good last night or didn't deserve to win, because she very clearly did. But
yeah, she deserved to win.
Obviously, the champ was not there, and she even said it herself, and Pena obviously put it on her. It was no fluke, but whether it could replicate itself, and like I've been stung with in the past, lightning striking twice, who's to say? But Juliana Pena is the champ for now. She got herself a $50,000 bonus for that. Everyone got bonuses last night, though. They were handing them out like Oprah. Oprah hands out gifts on her show, right, Dan? I know you're a big fan.
I think so, but I'm not positive. I think they gave one to everybody who had a finish except for Tony Kelly and Jillian Robertson, which is seems mean.
Yeah, nice. Yeah, the two. Well, I guess Robertson's making okay money, but Kelly is not. So Oliveira got the 50 G's and Pena got the 50 G's. Trying to think, is there anything else I wanted to mention about this fight?
You wanted to ask whether or not I heard Juliana Pena's post-fight comments about being real non-champ.
She's already in her head for – no, she's working on the next fight already.
To me, it's just one of those things where when a new champ becomes a champ, they want something to be like their thing, their legacy, their – she's the first ever – and there was already a mom champ, so then she had to basically tell Amanda Nunes she wasn't a real mom, which, by the way, that's not what you want to do in the first 10 minutes of your title reign, is, like, discredit somebody's family life.
I'll just pretend that she's working on the rematch already, and she wants to – because obviously all her talking worked leading into this fight, because Nunes clearly did not fight the way that she normally – would fight. So yeah, it was nice classy thing you want to hear from the champ, but that's what the UFC is all about, Dan, all about class. They had a guy, DWI and weapons charge guy, fight in the next fight. Jeff Neal looked okay, I guess, against Santiago Ponzinibbio. Split decision win. This was a wacky card. We had one judge giving the fight to our pick, Ponzinibbio, 29-28, and then we had one judge give Neil 30-27, and then the judge give Neil 29-28. So I think Jeff Neal clearly won the fight, and we clearly lost the fight. So this was one we were having trouble picking to begin with, because we had no idea what other guy would look like heading into the fight. So why did we whiff on this one, Dan?
I think it looked exactly like we thought it would. Neil just looked slightly better than Ponzinibbio, and I expected it in the other direction. Yeah. Like, it wasn't... I mean, like, I don't think we got a bad read on this one. I will say, I think the judge who gave it to Ponzinibbio was more wrong even than the guy who gave all three to Jeff Neal. I think it was closer to being all three rounds for Jeff Neal than it was to being two rounds for Ponzinibbio. I think very clearly the first and the third belong to Jeff Neal. I gave the second to Ponzinibbio, but, like, I could see you giving it to Neal. I can't see you giving either the first or the third to Ponzinibbio. That's just crazy. So, good fight, fun fight. Not too much to say about it, but I mean, like, Jeff Neal shed that losing streak, so good for him.
Yep. It's saying much about the night of fights we had, that this was a very good fight, and you know, we can just breeze right over it because there was far more consequential happenings on the card. There's only five. This is one of only five decisions that we had. More consequential was the fight that went on before that. Flyweights, Kai Kara France, TKO. It wasn't clear. He knocked him out a bunch of times, but Cody Garbrandt.
You only get a TKO when you knock him out more than once.
Exactly. So Kai Kara France got a performance of the night. We said that this was ripe for an underdog, and we got plus 120 on this. Garbrandt is very firmly on my fade list going forward if he continues to fight, because he's very clear he does not have it anymore. He's not changed his style whatsoever. Was he egging him on as he was knocked out, I thought?
Yeah, after the first time he dropped it,
yes.
There's this great picture of him standing in front of him with, like, his arms out, like, come get this, or check out what I just did, or whatever. Yeah, and, like, Kai Kara France, man. I mean, like, I hear a little bit of what you're saying about Cody Garbrandt being, like, somebody to fade in the future, because clearly his chin's not there, and he does throw recklessly. Yep. But I do think he's technically good enough to beat a lot of bantamweights. It would be a bad matchup for a lot of bantamweights. Like, we're going to talk about Sean O'Malley in a second. I think him and Sean O'Malley would make a great matchup, and I'm not sure that I wouldn't pick Cody Garbrandt in that fight either, because Cody Garbrandt's got a little wrestling in the back and other things too. But you're right. He does fight a fight that's dangerous, and Kai Kara France is not somebody you want to fight like that, because he is so fucking fast. There's a reason his nickname is so blank. He showed it. He looks so good. I'm happy for Kai Kara France, because he's a guy who I liked coming off of the Ultimate Fighter. Didn't immediately get a chance, had to work his way back for one. And man, he looks like he found his footing in flyweight right now.
And it took him like three or four knockdowns to win the fight, because World MMA ref of the year winner Herb Dean was ref in that fight. Did you see that he won a referee of the year at the World MMA Awards, Dan?
I will, and I will say that is maybe the second most egregious of the awards. Did you see the one that went to? So it's an award. It's like the Modelo Fighting Spirit Award or some bullshit like that. And it's supposed to be given to somebody who does something that's like in the spirit of MMA. So like past winners, I think, have included like Dustin Poirier giving some of his purse to a charity, or like this thing or that thing, or like, you know, like there's all kinds of like happy reasons why people do things outside. Maybe they gave it to Cody Garber when he brought that kid with cancer into the cage, and like the fighting spirit, right? They gave it to Habib for changing from an armbar to a triangle so that that Justin Gaethje's family was not distraught at the sight of his arm breaking.
Isn't that nice?
Which, that by nice the way, he changed from an armbar to a triangle because it was a submission that would work better to win a title.
It also was,
it was such a fucking wild reason to give somebody the award.
Okay, not to disparage Ring Card Girls, but how do they decide who wins Ring Card Girl of the Year?
I don't know.
They do the same job, and they wear the same outfits, and they wave the same, and everything's the same. So how do you pick a winner?
I'm not in the exact same camp as Habib, saying that they have, like, no purpose. There's obviously, like, a reason why Ring Card Girls are there. They're promotionally good for organizations. If they weren't, they wouldn't pay them. You know, like the UFC is really good at making sure they don't pay anybody who they don't think is going to make them money. So clearly there's a reason why. Plus, like in the history of like boxing and in MMA, whether it's outdated history or not, like they've kind of just always been there, correct? So like,
yes.
I'm not in the same camp as Habib, as in they have like no purpose. But, like, if they weren't there, I wouldn't care. And ultimately, yeah, the Ring Card Girl of the Year award is, like, one of the wildest things to have to vote on.
Yeah, I'm not necessarily critiquing the actual job. I'm just saying, how do you decide who is the winner of it? That's all. So, anyhow, moving on. This man, I disagree with what you're saying. I think Sean O'Malley would definitely knock out Cody Garbrandt, because Cody Garbrandt would want to show how tough he is. And Sean O'Malley's striking is next level, as he showed last night against Holyan Paiva. 4:42 in the first round, TKO'd him with punches. Hit this one, -325. Dan, how could you miss on such an easy pick?
I thought Paiva was going to be able to take more punches from him and turn it into a grappling match. He didn't. Sean O'Malley continues, you know, I've picked against him more than once, including the Marlon Vera fight, to be fair. But I think he's shown that he's the real deal. It's too bad we can't see him in there with Cody Garbrandt or somebody of that likes. But maybe sooner rather than later.
Yeah, was all the Dana White's comments saying he's not ready for top guys and you can't just put him in there with a killer. Is that his way of egging O'Malley on, because O'Malley very clearly says that he's not going to fight top rank guys at the amount of money he's being paid? So anytime Dana says something, I just assume it's him negotiating in public, which he likes to do. So I think him saying that is kind of trying to challenge O'Malley to make him fight higher rank fighters.
Yeah, you hit the nail on the head. And I don't think it's going to work with O'Malley, because O'Malley is the type of person who realizes his marketability and his ability to pulling money off of like whatever outside endeavor he wants is tied strictly to this like sense of invincibility that he pretends to have even after one loss. But if he were to go out there and like just absolutely get demolished or like manhandled by Dominic Cruz or something like that, that goes away. At least a good portion of that goes away. So I don't think it's going to work to egg O'Malley in there, but he certainly is trying to. That's, I believe 100% that is what he's trying to do.
And did you take any pointers or notes off his face tattoos, Dan, since you're going to be getting one in a couple weeks after you?
I mean, I only have, what do I have to make up? $300? And I've made up at least that much three events in a row.
So we're just saying money.
On a gambling podcast, yeah.
You know, money.
Money seems to be the important part here.
Well, if you like money, then the main card was not nice for us. We both only got two picks right You got two underdogs, though, so you made your wins count. I got one underdog and then the O'Malley, which was very clearly not an underdog. So main card, we get into that. Let me tell you about WinBet. If you like money, which Dan says that y'all should like money if you're listening to this, then WinBet's the place for you. Ready to win money and boost your odds? WinBet is now live in Arizona, Colorado, Indiana, Michigan, New Jersey, Tennessee, and Virginia. We're bringing the excitement of Win Las Vegas to online sports betting and casino play. Exclusive rewards right at your fingertips. Get in all your favorite teams, players, and sports from NFL, NBA, MLB, NHL, golf, MMA, WNBA, college football, and more. Plus, WinBet has some bonuses that you can get in on now. New users can bet $1 and win $100 in any sport. Plus, you can get up to $1,500 as a free bet on WinBet if you make a first deposit of $20 or more. Whatever your first wager is, WinBet will match it 200%. For example, you bet $100, you'll get $200 free bet. Max wager match is $750, so they will match it $1,500. Great promos, odds, and payouts are happening right now at WinBet. From booster parlays to live in-game odds in every major sport, we have what you need to win. Ready to play? Sign up today to receive a special offer, risk-free $1,000 sports bet. Bet big, win bigger with WinBet. Download the WinBet app now or visit WynNBet.com. Dan's, I'm putting Dan on the spot. He's going to tell you what to use your bonus money on. He's probably going to tell you bet on the Bulls or something.
No, because the Bulls aren't playing Monday. And
everybody's sick or that in protocol.
Everybody's sick or in protocol, which certainly doesn't help. No, I'll say take the Suns. We'll take Jeff's Phoenix Suns over the Clippers in the late night game on Monday. Looks like the Phoenix, it's probably going to be pretty damn close to a pickup. I'm not seeing the line necessarily yet, but it's going to probably be close to a pick 'em because obviously Phoenix should be a slight favorite, but it's in LA, which always skews the line a little bit. So even if they're in -2 or -3, maybe even as high as -4.5, I'd still take Phoenix there.
We got Devin Booker, DeAndre Ayton, probably questionable, and Paul George, probably questionable on the other side. So, yeah, that may be why there's no lines out yet.
Well, yeah, and the Clippers with Paul George being out his last game almost lost to the Magic. They were like, so close to losing to the Magic, and the Magic without Jalen Suggs too. So that's a pretty brutal Magic team.
Listen to this guy. No, and Dan knows about basketball. He writes about basketball for sportsgamblingpodcast.com. Now everyone check it out. Some of your picks last week came through. Your DFS article actually, I think most of your picks did good last week.
And it cashed. Yeah, it was.
And it cashed for you. Nice.
Yeah, it did. It was. You made anywhere between 1.5 and 2 times your money, depending on the contest you were in. So you can thank me for that if you'd like.
There you go. Thank him for that. But that's DFS. We're talking about WinBet. So, yeah, take the Suns bet over at WinBet. And if you like props, we're brought to you by PropSwap, America's marketplace to buy and sell sports bets. If you're not using PropSwap, then you are missing out. PropSwap is America's number one app to buy and sell sports bets. You can find the best odds in the country because you're buying directly from other bettors. Use the promo code SGP on your first deposit, and PropSwap will double it up to $500. Double the cash means double the odds. If you love sports betting, you need to be using PropSwap. Sellers across the country list their sports bets for sale, and thousands of buyers visit PropSwap every day to find the best odds in futures, props, and parlays. The average PropSwapper makes $500 a month just buying and selling PropSwap on the PropSwap app. PropSwap is where America buys and sells sports bets. All right. I'm thinking we can just rip through the prelims, but no, there's a lot of interesting things to talk about last night. It was quite a historic night. Featherweight main event. I whiffed. Dan got it right. Josh Emmett came through. Actually, it kind of played out the way I said it was going to play out, but Emmett hung in there and won the fight 29-28, 29-28, 30-27. Clearly, one of the most powerful strikers in any weight class. Knocked down Ige immediately. But he didn't totally gas out like I was thinking he would. Ige did put the pressure on him. He's incredibly tough. And like I said, it did play out the way I expected it to play out, but Ige did not do enough, or Emmett did enough himself to earn himself a decision in this fight. So I bow to Dan Vreeland. He got this one right.
Yeah, I think this one comes down to Emmett landing that big blow in the beginning, A.
Yep.
And B, kind of like I said on Wednesday's show, like, Ige's not going to beat very many people he can't out-wrestle because he's not going to, like, outbox any of the elite featherweights. He might outbox some, like, lower-level featherweights, but, like, ultimately, he's going to have to use his wrestling to beat some of those guys. So when he can't wrestle somebody like Josh Emmett, you lose.
Yeah. He tried, but, yeah, it didn't.
Yeah, Emmett can wrestle, though.
Emmett couldn't wrestle. And what are we going to do with Josh Emmett now? Like, he's like, it's about time he gets like title contender status, or at least like number one contender type fight. He is in the featherweight rankings I run on my MMA site, MMA-manifesto.com. He is a solid third place behind Volkanovski and Holloway. He was third coming in. He's even more in third place. He's even more solidly in third place, closer to Holloway than he was before. After that performance, he's won, what, 4 straight fights and, what, 6 out of 7? So, like, now that he's hopefully healthy, I think it's time to accelerate it and get him, see if he's actually an actual title contender or not.
Yeah, I really would like to see him fight Calvin Kattar. It's too bad he's already booked with Giga Chikadze. And personally, I think I would say Giga too, but like if Giga beats Calvin Kattar, I think he's probably on a short list for a title shot after Max Holloway. So, you know, a name that's poking right around that same part of the division right now is Arnold Allen. I think that would kind of be a fun fight for Josh Emmett. I think mostly for him, with all the time missed, he just has to stay busy. And make sure he's still getting fights in. He's not young either. I think people forget how old he is. He's like 36. So, he needs to stay busy. He needs to rattle off a couple of wins against real top guys. And, if he had come out here and finish it, we might have him on a short list of contenders. But, you know, he put in a good performance against Dan Ige, and that's really all you need to know.
And it was the, like I said, rare decision last night. Oh, Sean O'Malley got a bonus, too. I forgot to mention that earlier. Everyone got bonuses. Emmett did not. We got another decision right before that. I got this one right, though. Dan got it wrong. Dominic Cruz edged out Pedro Munhoz. Munhoz is extremely tough. He had Cruz very close to being stopped in the first round after dropping him, but Cruz ended up being Dominic Cruz the rest of the way and won 29-28. Dan, how could you ever get this one wrong?
You know, I said that Munhoz would be quick enough to catch him, and he was, which is crazy. Yep. And then it just wasn't enough, or he lost gas, or Cruz found his angles, I'm not quite sure what it was. It was Cruz found another level in that second part, or Munhoz lost a level. But I mean, like if Munhoz hung in there like he did in the first round and stood toe to toe with him and was able to hit him, you know, I think that's a different fight, but ultimately it wasn't. Props to Dominic Cruz. I'm not sure how high up his ceiling is still in the bantamweight division, but that's a pretty good feather in your cap at this point.
Yep. Yeah, hopefully he just keeps fighting, and then we'll see where his ceiling is. So, and I was joking about Dan with that one. That was basically a pick'em fight heading in, so no shame getting that one wrong. We did get this. The next fight was a pick 'em for some reason, which very clearly we were right on with Tai Tuivasa at -112. It was Dan's lock pick, which he nailed. He got 89-29, trying to dig himself out of his locks hole, which I don't think he will by the end of the year. 19-15 now, down $400 in his locks, but he nailed this one. Tuivasa looked fantastic against Augusto Sakai. Got the knockout 26 seconds into the second round and got himself an extra $50,000 and probably got himself some stomach bugs at the very least after all the shoeys he drank.
I said this on Twitter too. I would say, you know, everybody talks about the shoey afterwards. The shoey is his second most fun celebration. That weird little shimmy he does after he knocks somebody out is infinitely more interesting to me than the shoey, because like it's funny, it's unique. He's the only one who does that, and now like the entire audience is doing a shoey, so that's less fun to me. But yeah, Tai Tuivasa, what a run he's on right now. I hope they give him a serious challenge now. Like he should be fighting, if not a top 10 ranked guy, a top 15 ranked guy, right? Like I would put him in there right now. I mean, Augusto Sakai was ranked 11th. Yeah. I'd put him in there with Marcin Tybura. I'd put him in there with Yair Rozenstruik. Like I think him and Rozenstruik would be an excellent fight.
He's extremely popular. I say he's getting right into that headlining a fight night card realm.
Oh,
well, considering he's a heavyweight.
He also headlined one already. Do you remember that?
Did he for real?
He headlined against Junior Dos Santos.
Oh, yeah.
During that, like, brutal losing streak he had.
Yeah, they got him cut, kind of.
Kind of? Yeah, like, nobody really knows. But, yes, kind of got him cut. But, yeah, he headlined against Junior Dos Santos, which kicked off that losing streak. It was after he had beaten Arlovsky, which I think people had forgotten he had beaten Arlovsky too. But now four straight wins, Stefan Struve, Harry Hunsucker, Greg Hardy, and Augusto Sakai. Man, he's a lot of fun to watch, for real.
Yeah. Any chance Dan gets to say Harry Hunsucker, he will take. He found an opportunity once again.
Doesn't he have a fight coming up in January?
He does, I think
Harry
Hunsucker. Looking forward to it. Just for getting to talk about him. And then the prelims open up. We got this one right as well. Bruno Blandado Silva knocked TKO'd actually. Dan's favorite fighter, Jordan Wright, the Beverly Hills Ninja, minute 28 into the first round. Because as we predicted, Wright decided he was going to get in a striking battle with Silva, and it did not go well. And Silva got a bonus.
I didn't even say that it was necessarily wrong for him to get in a striking battle, because he doesn't really have much of another choice. He doesn't grapple well. My problem was just his defense is such shit that he was going to get himself knocked out, and his defense proved to be really terrible, and he got himself knocked out. So, yeah, that was maybe one of the easier picks on the whole card, because, man, Jordan Wright, just a whole resume of cans.
Yes, and no, there's no cans in the UFC other than Jordan Wright, possibly. So Silva's looking good. That's, what, 3-0, right, in the UFC at this point? Yeah. Time to – he's not super young either, right? So it's time you can kind of crank it up on him too at this point. Can we not?
Yeah, I'm not sure I'm sold on him as like a contender. Do I really think he needs like a ranked opponent yet? But like if you wanted to book him with somebody like Brendan Allen, I'd be fine with that.
Okay.
Like I'd be cool with
you're fine
Brendan
with it.
Allen. Yeah, yeah. You can call the UFC and tell him that I'm okay with it.
Okay. So, yeah, those prelims went a lot better for us. I hit, 3 of 4. Dan hit 3 of 4 also. Yeah, 3 of 4, just a different 3 of 4. So, yes, that was more like it for us. All right, we'll finish off the early prelims in a sec. But first, Better Fantasy. Better Fantasy is the new free-to-play app that lets you sync your fantasy football league and bet on the matchups. You can cash out for gift cards when your bets hit and even help raise money for charity along the way. They're a brand new company looking to grow the early adopter community with a slick app, and that's very fun to use. And plus, one of the reasons we do love using it is they offer prop betting. So if you're in a state that hasn't legalized gambling yet, you can get in some prop bets on Better Fantasy. Plus, they added a cool bonus. If you get your entire league to join Better Fantasy, they'll give the league a $150 gift card to get a sick-ass trophy from trophysmack.com. It's totally free to play. Download today on the iPhone or Android. Check them out, betterfantasy.com/SGPN. That's BETTOR, fantasy.com/SGPN. Plus, SoBet. We're brought to you by SoBet. Since when did sports betting become so rigid? Sports betting is meant to be social. When I picture betting, I picture bootleggers with mustaches tossing bets around in a speakeasy. SoBet is taking the social lineage of betting and putting a modern twist on it by providing a modern platform. SoBet is changing the game with their new product. Head over to SoBet.io, create an account, and see for yourself. Through their fully functioning and free web application, you can access a demo of their app, which will launch next fall. The app includes consensus lines from Vegas, a feed of what other people are betting on, and the ability to send friendly wagers to anyone you know via text, QR codes, and links, among other methods. No money is transacted on the app and is purely competitive. Next time you're with your friends watching sports, turn the dial up a notch. Go to SoBet.io and see who can hit the most ridiculous bets. Users have the ability to place bets off Vegas odds or generate a bet by changing any metric they want, as long as somebody is on the other side to accept. Let's get back to the roots of betting with SoBet. Go to SoBet.io, SGPN. That's SoBet.io/SGPN today to join the revolution. Prelims. Andre Munoz submitted Eric Anders, 3-13 in. As we predicted, not much to say. Munoz is a very good grappler.
Yep. And if he submitted Jacare, he was going to submit Eric Anders.
Exactly. I would say I like Munoz's chances with his grappling more than the person we're going to talk about in a couple of fights coming up, Dan. Because he has other aspects to his game as well.
Yes, I like Andre Munoz very much at middleweight. I think he beats a lot of top middleweights. I've had him in my top 15 rankings pretty much nonstop since he beat Jacare, whereas he's dropped out of the rankings, I think because of wins from other people and, jostling of the numbers and stuff like that. But I've had him consistently in that. I think he's a top 15 middleweight. Clearly, I think there's a lot of dudes he beats in there.
Aaron Blanchfield. This was the grappling heavy portion of the event. We had three straight blue chip grapplers fighting. Blanchfield is the real deal, as Dan was telling everyone. Three rounds to none over Miranda Maverick. Just totally out-grappled her. Dan got it plus 112. I underestimated Blanchfield. I thought Maverick was going to be able to keep standing at least long enough to win the fight. I was wrong. Blanchfield is the real deal.
Yeah, and I would say this too, and I wasn't sure she was going to have the better wrestling than Miranda Maverick, which, by the way, she did. She had the much better wrestling.
Very clearly.
But I did think that Maverick's wanting to keep it on the feet would create openings for Blanchfield to initiate the grappling, which I thought was going to play badly in Miranda Maverick's favor. And man, did Blanchfield's grappling just look otherworldly. She looked incredible in there with her jiu-jitsu, both from a positioning standpoint, from a takedown standpoint. I mean, just like trips and counters and everything and sweeps and, you know, passes. She passed Miranda Maverick's guard a bunch of times. Submission attempts were there. Like, yeah, at her age, doing something like that to somebody else who can grapple – man, I really wish she had fought Macy Barber here because she would have just decimated her.
Hey, there's still time. Do you have a name in mind for her next, or just?
I think she should be fighting ranked opponents.
Really?
I don't think she needs to be fighting Macy Barber. Like, she can go in and if you want to get her a payday and more hype, like, sure, let her go beat up Macy Barber next. But like,
Macy Barber's ranked, I'm pretty sure anyway, though, Dan. So.
Oh God, no way. Is she really? She's
probably
not ranked. She's not on my list. So, But, like, Macy Barber arguably got out-grappled nonstop by Miranda Maverick, right? And it was pretty clear. Miranda Maverick couldn't hold a candle to Aaron Blanchfield. So it's pretty obvious to me that if this hit the mat, Barber would be in the fight for about 4 seconds and it would be over. So I'd like to see Aaron Blanchfield against somebody else with, like, slightly – elevated wrestling chops. Somebody like Jessica I maybe would be a good matchup for her. You know, like one of those Wiley veterans who I think she could both make her name off of and really test whether or not she can win like a gritty ass fight too. Because she went in there and beat Miranda Maverick, but was never kind of put in a bad position, never kind of like forced to push through failing on a takedown attempt. I mean, I think she hit every single one she tried. So yeah, put her in there with somebody who can wrestle like Jessica I, and heck, I think she beats Jessica I, so might as well build her up for the star she is going to be.
Cynthia Calvillo, perhaps, too. She's also right around that range.
Yeah, although I will say, I think Cynthia Calvillo has probably got to, like, fight, like, a real low-level up-and-comer. Like, unless they're looking to cut Cynthia Calvillo, yeah. I wouldn't book her with Aaron Blanchfield. You know, like, Jessica I, that's kind of where she's at in her career, right? Because she's older, and like, if she can't beat this up-and-comer, like, what even is she anymore? Like, but Cynthia Calvillo is like, I mean she's a little, oh no, I guess she's older too. I just googled, she's 34. Did you know that?
Yes, remember we were talking about that when she fought, how she's surprisingly old.
Surprises me every time. So maybe she doesn't need to shit or get off the pot too, so maybe Aaron Blanchfield's in the cards for her as well.
Macy Barber's number 13th, by the way, in the official rankings. Dan finds a way to talk about her, though. I think he secretly likes her. I think Dan likes her.
He's coming off a loss.
He's true. Featherweights. Do we need to talk about this fight at all? Ryan Hall defeated Derek Minner, as everyone predicted, right? 3 rounds to none. 30-27, 30-27, 29-27, because Minner was dumb and tried to grapple with him, which he did fine. He didn't get himself tapped out or anything, but he clearly lost the fight by grappling. He clearly was winning the fight when he was striking.
Here's the thing, though. I'm not sure. I mean, like, I think there were probably some more opportunities to, like, disengage with the grappling and get back to the feet. But I'm not sure necessarily that it was, like, a plan that could have worked to just sustain and be like, no, I will not grapple with him. Like Aliyah Topuria did, basically. Because, first of all, Ryan Hall wasn't doing that weird role. Right. Thing where he's going to get punched in the head anymore, which is smart on his part. And then second of all, I think Derek Minner is just like more susceptible to being pulled in that than Aliyah Topuria. So I think it maybe not have been the most sustained game plan to just keep it standing, but a little bit more of it definitely would have helped instead of just like blindly engaging with a guy who's 7,000 times the grappler you are and then just playing defense for 15 minutes. So yeah, it was a bad game plan.
than I predicted.
And it was good to see that Hall's chin was not didn't seem to be affected from being knocked out last fight. He took some shots and seemed fine.
Yeah, and I think people forget that Ilia Topuria has some crazy KO power. So while people and it was a fluky position in that one. While people are like have questioned his chin lately, I think it's there. I think it's fine.
This was a string of five straight picks that Dan got right, including Blanchfield was +112. So this is where the hay was made for Dan's big night. He got the next one wrong, though. We both did. Randy Costa, he was my lock pick, so I lost $100 in my locks. So I'm down almost $200 in my locks now. I'm at 20-12 for the locks. But Tony Kelly looked like a world beater against Randy Costa. Just kept the pace on him, relentless with punches and elbows, and TKO'd him with elbows in the second round.
Yeah, I'm not sure if he looked so much like a world beater as he did look
Randy
like
Costa.
He looked so much like somebody who came in with the perfect game plan for Randy Costa. You know, having seen Randy Costa run out of gas against Adrian Yanez, he was like, well, let's see if he can do it again. And he did. So props to him for that. I will say his striking looked really sloppy in some points. But you come in with the perfect game plan against somebody, you certainly can beat him. But I'm not sold on Tony Kelly as a guy we should pay too much attention to at bantamweight. I still think he gets hit too much. And I think against somebody who has a little bit better of a gas tank and can match that pace, it's going to be trouble for him.
He had time to prepare his game plan because he drove to the event, because he doesn't want to wear a mask on planes, because he's not a sheep like the rest of us, Dan.
Yeah, I did hear that. They might have brought it up once or twice on the broadcast.
That's MMA for you. And then the opening curtain jerker we got right, Jillian Robertson -375. Submitted Priscilla Cachoeira a second left in the first round. Cachoeira was eye gouging her, trying to get out of the submission, and got submitted regardless. She tapped out with the second left. So take that, dirty cheater, and Robertson, the Canadian, came through.
Yeah, I don't call for people to be fired too often. You usually hear me actually doing the opposite here when Jeff suggests it. But you usually do suggest, like, is it time to fire?
It's true.
Eric Anders. And then I have to be like,
yeah, boy.
No, I was like, no, he's pretty good. He just fought a better guy that night, and he lost a couple in a row. He'll be fine. Is it time to fire Randy Costa? this time, I will say it's time to fire Priscilla Cachoeira. She was on a two-fight winning streak, and I couldn't care less. You do that kind of shit, you don't belong in the UFC. You don't belong in any park corner MMA, for that matter. I put that right along the same level of, and maybe even worse, than Usman Poharis. You want to do that kind of, like, blatant, rampant, possible damage to somebody in a way that, like, wouldn't have even saved her in the fight. It was just, like, spiteful, vindictive, trying to permanently injure somebody. She doesn't belong in MMA.
Yep. Hopefully that's what happens. We shall see. So Dan went 9-5 last night, made $175. I went 7-7, very mediocre, down 244. So on the year, I'm at 59%. Dan's at 55%. I'm a full 20 correct picks ahead of him. So I got that in the bag at least. But the money lead, I'm down 20. Of course, we're down money. I'm betting on every fight. Just we're bragging like we're good at this, but no, we're down money. If you bet $100 in every fight, then you're going to be down money. I'm down 2,700. Dan's down 3,000. So it's a little over, I'm rounding numbers here. It's a little over $300 difference, which is very gainable, possibly, Dan.
If you use my contender series picks, I'm way up.
Way up. Because I didn't make any picks there. He's way ahead. All right. We didn't mention Charles Oliveira possibly cheating, grabbing the glove, but whatever. That's neither here nor there. I didn't really notice a glove grab, but Herb Dean is the ref of the year. So if there was a glove grab, he would have noticed it, right?
He would have caught it. Yeah.
Yeah, you would have stopped it. All right. We've got picks for you. We're going to give you some picks for this coming weekend's KSW. But first, I'll remind you once again, Prize Picks. Dan gave you some picks earlier on. Take his advice. Head over to prizepicks.com. You can sign up today, get the 100% deposit bonus by using our promo code SGP. And make sure you download our app, the SGPN app. We're now live in the App Store and Google Play. Give you easy access to all our picks and podcasts. And if you give us a lovely review, that would help us greatly. All right, KSW is coming up. Do you know what KSW stands for, Dan?
Yeah, it's a whole bunch of Polish words.
It is. You know what you tell me?
No, it's think it roughly so the K stands for conflict or
confrontation. Like
yeah, which confrontation, so conflict. Yes. So it loosely translates to the word conflict. And then I don't know the words the S and W stand for. I'm half Polish, but don't have the slightest clue.
Well, that's right. You told me you're Polish. Zduk Walki, martial arts confrontation for us.
Oh, English martial speakers. Arts confrontation. Yes, that's a way less fun sounding organization.
It is. It is. So we've got KSW 65 coming up. Halidov versus Soldic, or is it Soldic?
It's Soldic, yeah. Roberto Soldic.
Dan's an Eastern European, so he knows how to say all these guys' names. So this is coming up on the 18th, which is what, Saturday? Yes, Saturday. I'm just going to try to get you start times and all that stuff. We'll go to lovely Tapology because they always have all the info you need. So much better than Sherdog, right, Dan?
Way better.
Way better. All right.
They're starting at 10 a.m. on Saturday.
Right. 10 a.m. Saturday morning, 10 a.m. Eastern. How do you watch it around here, Dan? You have to go to nefarious means?
No, I'm pretty sure you can go to KSW's website. I think they sell all of them on pay-per-view for like $20. If I'm remembering right, it's been a while since I've got a KSW event, but like they usually have some pretty good broadcasting means. You do have to like pay a little bit for it, but this fight card is probably worth paying for. There's a lot of fun ones on it.
Yeah, for people who aren't up on KSW, it's I'd say close to Bellator equivalent, probably at least for their big cards.
I would say in terms of like pure skill, top to bottom. KSW is way better. The very tippity top of Bellator is probably a little bit better than KSW, right. But KSW is more like the UFC in that they have like a level that you can say that just about every fighter on the card is at. They have like a threshold that you need to get to in order to be on the card. Whereas like in a lot of Bellator cards, like you can assume you're going to see like a couple of like 1-3 guys, you're gonna see an 0-4 guy fight, and occasionally you'll see like a couple of dudes who are only like 2-0 in KSW, but they're like decent prospects. They're both 2-0, and like it's like only one or two fights at the very bottom of the card. Whereas like Bellator has like an entire prelims of like crazy old journeyman who's like 13 yeah. and 80, fighting you know an up and comer who's 2-0.
And they make quite a spectacle of these broadcasts too. They probably do a better job than Bellator
They do a better job than the UFC in terms of making it a spectacle, like crazy walk. If you were a fan of Pride back in the day for like, you know, real old school UFC fans, you would really like KSW if you haven't given it a shot yet.
And we're going to give you a reason as I drift away from the mic. We're going to give you a reason to give it a shot because Dan's got some picks for this coming weekend's event. We like to sprinkle some of these picks in so we don't just give you guys recaps of how amazing we are at picking fights, well, or how unamazing we are. All right, so Dan's picked the top three fights for you, two featherweights and a middleweight fight. Let's start with the featherweight, the non-title fight that he picked for you. UFC cast off Damian Stasiak versus Lom Ali Eskiju, who I've seen his last name different other than Eskiju also. I don't know what – do you know what the deal is with that or not?
I don't. I think I've only ever seen it that way, but he is Russian too, originally, okay. So it could be partially due to like a translation from the Cyrillic alphabet to the, which is why we see Alexei Oleinik spelled 12 different ways, because it's just that there's no like clear guide to go from Cyrillic to Arabic alphabet.
There you go. Dan's so smart, everybody. All right, so this is, like I said, featherweight fight, three rounds. Here is the breakdown. Stasiak's nickname is Webster. Do you know why is his nickname Webster?
I don't.
It's funny, though.
It's really funny.
And SKG's nickname is Leon, which is just as funny for no apparent reason. So there you go. We got Leon versus Webster. All right.
Is it because he looks like Leon the Professional? Does he look a little bit like Leon the Professional? Do you know what I'm talking about?
I know the name, but...
The movie Leon the Professional with young Natalie Portman.
I'm looking up if he looks like him.
I don't think he does. Maybe I'm wrong.
Nah, not really. Yeah, he does kind of.
Maybe that's it.
Just fine. All right. That's neither here nor there. Let's pick a winner for you here. Well, Danville, at least. Let's do Stasiak first. 13-7 with a knockout and 10 submissions. He's 2-1 in the KSW. He's won 3 of his last 4 fights. He's won 2 straight. What can I tell? He was in the UFC for a spell. He went 2-4 in the UFC. He used to fight at bantamweight. He used to fight at lightweight. This is right in the middle. He's got an inch of height on Eskiju and an inch of reach. He's at +150. As for Leon, Leon's 18-5 with 1 no contest. He's got 8 knockouts and 3 submissions. He's been subbed himself 3 times, though, so that could be a red flag right there. He's going up against a submission dude. He's 1-0 in KSW. He was the GMC champ, the RNC champ, and the Super FC champ. He's fans of all those. Oh, Superior FC champ, excuse me. Dan's fans of all those, right?
Yeah, of course.
Of course he is. He's 2 years younger than Stasiak, -200. So what do you like here?
I like Stasiak for pretty much all the reasons you outlined. Eskiju has really good boxing, crazy good power. He does have pretty good defensive wrestling, but, you know, like you said, part of the problem is most of his losses are via giving up really crappy takedowns and winding up on his back and getting submitted. And Stasiak just happens to be really good at that. I think Eskiju ultimately is like a better prospect-y type guy for KSW, but Stasiak, I think, is enough of a good stylistic matchup for him, and at dog money, I like him here.
There you go. He's on a nice little roll, too, ever since he left the UFC. All right, moving on to our first title fight. It's the rematch. KSW Featherweight Championship. Current champ Daniel Torres, who won the belt off of Saladin Parnasse, I believe is how you say that. Let's tell you about the champ first. Tucano is his nickname, Toucan. He's 12-4 with 1 no contest. He's got 6 knockouts, 1 submission. He's 4-1 KSW. He's won 4 straight fights, including his last fight. He won via knockout, which was for the belt, and which was against the man he's fighting now, Parnasse. He's got 2 inches of height over the challenger. He's at +230. So we got a champion underdog here who already beat his foe. Maybe Dan can break that down and explain that to us. Parnasse, 15-1-1, 2 knockouts, 5 submissions, 6-1 in KSW. He won his last fight via submission. He used to be the champ, as I said. He's 3 years younger than Torres, 2 inches of reach, -333. So what's up with the line here, Dan? The champ already beat the challenger.
Yeah, I think most people are seeing this as what I believe it to be, too, is just a lucky punch or a lucky elbow in this case. You know, like Torres went into that first fight a -810 underdog, or Parnasse, on the other hand, rather, when it is a -810 favorite. Torres was getting about +650 on the turnaround. So the odds are closer because he did land that lucky blow, you know, not to say that a blow is lucky, like he landed it. So I think a lot of people saw that the first time and they're like, okay, well, you could do it again, but the odds of him doing it again are pretty low because Parnasse is a more complete martial artist, is the real deal here. And I am going to take him here at -330, and I actually don't even think that number is all that inflated and not a bad play, especially if you were going to hashtag throw it into parlay with something else. I definitely like Parnasse here.
Now, you said the real deal made me think of something. You don't see a lot of KSW guys go to the UFC. You see a few. We've talked about former champs before. Do you think it's because they pay enough that guys aren't willing to leave, or what's the deal there? Do you have any insight on that?
Yeah. I've actually talked to the owner of KSW before, Robert Lewandowski, who's a really nice guy. Part of it is because in Poland, they don't see themselves as a #2 or a #3 organization. Like, right. Polish fans don't really follow the UFC. Polish fans of MMA watch KSW because it's easier to find, it's easier to watch, it's on better times of the day. It's just like catered to the Polish fans. So it is like it's a #1 organization in that country, which is weird, right? Because like even you as a Canadian who watches Canadian football or doesn't watch Canadian football in this case,
no.
But even people who watch Canadian football, if you're a big fan of the CFL, you probably also watch the NFL, and nobody says that the other way. In this case, it is truly one of those ones where like, yeah, a lot of UFC fans probably don't watch KSW, and there probably aren't any KSW fans who really watch much UFC either. So I think he has the ability to be a star here, get paid really well. And that's why you don't see a lot of guys cross over. I mean, we've seen a couple, but they pay really well. The you know, show, like you said before, the production is crazy. It's really fun to watch. It's probably really fun to be a part of. So, yeah, KSW does a good job of retaining their talent.
Yeah, that's something I forgot to mention, too, off the bat. They get huge crowds, too, do they not?
Yeah, I think they had, for the Coliseum event, which was, I can't remember exactly what KSW was, I think they had 63,000 in attendance.
That's insane.
Which that's an insane MMA fight. I'd have to pull up the exact one, but like, yeah, that is absolutely nuts. 63,000 people at one fight.
There you go. The main event this weekend, it's for the middleweight championship. It's a champ versus champ fight, which people always seem to clamor for. Middleweight champ Mamed Khalidov versus welterweight champ Roberto Soldic. Like I said, champ versus champ. And we have a defending champ coming in as an underdog once again in this fight. Khalidov's nickname's Cannibal. He's 35-7-2 with 15 knockouts, 16 submissions. He's been subbed three times himself. He's 23-2 in the KSW, so 20 wins, 3 losses, 2 draws. He's only won one of his last 4 fights, however. He's been fighting in a lot of champ versus champ and super fight type things and losing them. He did win his last fight via knockout, which won him back the 185-pound championship. That was back in October of 2020. He won it back because he was the former champ at middleweight. He also was the former champ at light heavyweight. He made his debut way back in 2004. He's got an inch of height over Soldic, 3 inches of reach. You would think it would be more with the weight class difference, but no, he's not going to have a huge physical advantage, at least lengthwise, over the challenger. He's at plus 163. So like I said, the champ is coming in as the underdog in both of these fights. All right, the welterweight champ is RoboCop, not the UFC's RoboCop, KSW RoboCop. 19-3, 16 knockouts, 1 submission, 7-1 in KSW. He's been the welterweight champ twice. This is his second reign. He's won 6 straight fights and 13 of 14 fights. He fought his last fight at middleweight, getting ready for this one, which he won. He's the SMMAC champ, or was SMMAC champ, the final fight champ, and also the superior FC champ. He was a pro boxer. He's 4-0. He's 15 years younger than Khalidov, minus 225. Is this line correct, first of all?
It's weird. So I would say I like Soldic to win this fight. I think both a combination of his youth, his speed, his boxing, and the fact that he's got a judo background, I think really plays well against Khalidov. Because Khalidov is a guy who, like Scott Askham, kind of like grinded him out into a fight because he is like a flashier striker. But I would say the line really bothers me. If I was giving advice on whether or not to bet this fight, I'd kind of say underdog or pass because I don't like how high of a favorite Soldic is. I think if you could get Soldic down in like the 160 range, I'd probably feel a lot better about him. But up at like negative 220s, 230s, which is where I've been seeing him, I think it's just way too high. So if you do like Khalidov's striking, I think that that's worth it. But ultimately, I think Soldic's, you know, grappling and boxing is probably going to be too much for him, but it's way closer of a fight than those odds would suggest. So, like I said, in these fights, we're not mandated to put $100 on each. So I would say bet the dog or pass on this one.
But your pick to win outright would be Soldic?
So it would be Soldic, yes.
Okay, there you go. So Dan's hedged his bets, and he's this way you can say you were correct no matter who wins, right?
Yeah, I mean, I know I do that on the, like, contender series type fights, but, like, this one, I was like, oh, I kind of like Soldic in that fight. I wonder if it's, like, even money, because that's kind of what I assumed it would be at, and I would be like, man, Soldic at even money would be an awesome bet. And then I looked, and I was like, oh, he's a freaking massive favorite. Oh, cool. Like, I'm not even remotely interested in betting this fight anymore.
Yeah. Okay, I looked up the event. If you do want to buy it off of KSW TV, $10 US, so even cheaper than Dan said, so why the heck not? With all the money you've won, why not? You've won thanks to us. You can buy this event if you want to bet on it. So,
and you'll make that much money off of Damian Stasiak, too, so, you know.
Exactly. And also, I should mention, if you like accents, then like accents over names, various accents, and you're going to love looking at the KSW fight cards because everybody's got some interesting accent over their letters. Or it's a lot of
all different shapes too.
Yes, no umlauts, unfortunately. No Motley Crue umlauts, but it's still.
You get the one that looks like a U, the one that points forward, the one that points backwards. You got the one that looks like a V. Like, yeah, this is a lot of fun accents.
You got it all. Well, this was a fun episode, but let's put it to bed. You people have gotten enough free content for one episode. We gave you winning picks. So you follow us on Twitter. I'm getting tantalizingly close to 1,000 followers, which would make me feel so important if I got there. I'm very close. So if you haven't followed me yet, just follow me. And follow me with all your fake accounts, your bot accounts, and everything else, too. I don't care if you're real or not. Jeff Fox, writer. And if you're following Dan, you can unfollow him. He's Gumby Vreeland because he has enough. We don't need to swell his head any further. And read our stuff, sportsgamblingpodcast.com and MMA-manifesto.com. And what else? Subscribe to this feed. If you're not listening to us on the MMA Gambling Podcast feed, if you can go out and find that feed, subscribe to it. You will get us in your ear holes earlier, at least a day earlier than we get out on the SGPN feed, which could be the difference between a lot of money for you because lines sometimes change very quickly from when we drop an episode. So make sure you do that. I think that's all I really have to tell you. Dan's going to take us home because I like it because it's always like a tightrope act with him. You never know if he's going to screw up or if he's going to make it to the other side. So let's see.
I'm David Gubby-Ruin. He's Juicy Jeff Fox. And we'll catch you on Wednesday. Bye.